Well, I direct your attention this morning to Matthew, the 5th chapter. It begins on page 1393 in the Pew Bible. We're going to go ahead and turn the page to 1394 as we begin and continue our study of the Sermon on the Mount. We begin to break this down into little manageable chunks. So it has fallen my lot this morning to discuss Jesus and the Old Testament. Now, this is a very, very important study this morning. In fact, I don't know that I can stress to you the importance of it enough. Because so many things that come as far as controversial issues and things oftentimes refer back to the Sermon on the Mount. There's a lot of questions, in not only in just the religious world, but also in the church itself, as to how does the Sermon on the Mount fit into the grand scheme of things. And that's very important that we're able to understand this as we study this morning. For a text, we'll read Matthew, the 5th chapter, verses 17 through 20. And Jesus says, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law, till all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so, shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you, that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." So with this passage before us, we're going to study the relationship of Jesus and the Old Testament. And that may be something that we don't often connect together. We think of the Old Testament as before Jesus and the New Testament as after Jesus. But what is the relationship of Jesus and the Old Testament? So I have a major question. A lot of times I like to have several questions at the beginning of a study. There's one question under consideration this morning. Would you consider the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount to be part of the Old Testament or part of the New Testament? And how we answer that question is going to be critical in understanding the rest of the chapter, the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, and really many events. How do we answer this question? Was the Sermon on the Mount, was Jesus just rehashing the law of Moses, or was Jesus teaching something new? And we have to have that understanding before we can really get a grasp of what the Sermon on the Mount has to talk teaches. The answer to this question will determine how we use the Sermon on the Mount on many vital issues going forward. And I believe there's a lot of misunderstanding in the religious world because of a misunderstanding of the answer. And so we're going to try to find some common ground here as to what the answer to this question is. Were the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount part of the Old Testament or part of the New Testament? So we're going to discuss Jesus and the Old Testament and the way he used the scriptures. And this is a very complicated, in-depth study. And so I'm going to try to condense it into a very short time frame. But I hope it's something that will begin to get us to think and to understand more as we go forward. We'd like to take this opportunity, though, to go to God in a word of prayer. The outline for this study comes from the work of Brother George Batty. If you look on our website, I have the different sermons, the different studies that he has posted. And so if you want the full version of it, you have access to it there on our website. As we begin to read here the idea of the Sermon on the Mount here, Matthew chapter 5, I believe that this is actually a fulfillment of prophecy. In Isaiah, the 52nd chapter, verse 15, it's a messianic prophecy, and it's talking about the coming servant. It says, "So shall he sprinkle many nations. Kings shall shut their mouths at him. For what had not been told them, they shall see, and what they had not heard, they shall consider." They were going to hear things when the servant came, Isaiah prophesied. The people were going to hear things that they had never heard before. It was going to be new. And this was not really what the Jews were expecting of their Messiah. You know, Brother Paul gave a lesson here a couple weeks ago, what the Jews were expecting. They thought somebody was going to come in and just drop the hammer, and he was going to restore the law of Moses. And he was going to reteach the law, and all the world was going to fall under the law. And he was going to be this great and powerful military leader. He was going to put people back in its place, and the law of Moses was going to rule supreme across the land. Well, that's not what it says in Isaiah. Isaiah says this coming serpent, this Messiah, is going to teach things that people have never heard before. They're going to have to consider things that were new. Keep that in mind as we go through our study. It says, what they had not heard. The servant would teach things. They were new. They were unheard of. They were new approaches. So much, in fact, that the Jews were going to be astonished. Now, we need to keep that phrase in mind. The Jews would be astonished. After Jesus finished the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7, the Bible says as much. And so it was when Jesus had ended these things that the people were astonished at his teaching. For he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Now that is very important if you were a Jew. And maybe we don't quite get the whole picture where it starts talking about the scribes and the concept of authority. If I was a scribe, all I could do would be to quote what what the scriptures say. As I stand before you this morning, I'm not speaking of my own authority, not in the least. If I say something, I'm going to give you a chapter and a verse, and I'm going to read it, and I hope I'm interpreting it correctly. But I'm not speaking of my own authority. These people here that heard the Sermon on the Mount, they were astonished because it says he taught them as one having authority. That Jesus was not referring back to lessons or to particular scriptures. He was not referring back to particular things in the Old Testament. He was speaking as though he had the authority of God, which he did. And the people were just blown away by this. They were astonished at the words that Jesus said. So let's pick up in verse 17 and we'll go through verse 20. Matthew 5 and 17, Jesus said, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill." This word fulfill carries with it a meaning of completion. It's to put everything together. It is to put a kind of the bow on top of the package, as it were. It is to complete everything. This phrase is the law and the prophets. You'll come across this many times in the New Testament. And these two phrases, these two words, are used to define the Old Testament. So when you hear a writer talk about the law, that is in reference to the first five books of the Bible. When you hear them talk about the prophets, the prophets are basically the remainder of the Old Testament. Sometimes you'll get Psalms thrown in there too. So Jesus one time ever talked about the law, the prophets, and Psalms. Well, Psalms would kind of go either way because many people considered it the work of the prophets. So they would just put Psalms as part of the prophets. So when you hear this phrase, the law of the prophets, that is in reference to the old law of Moses. In Matthew 22 and 40, Jesus has just talked about this idea of love God and love your neighbor. And he says in verse 40, "On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." He's referring back to the law of Moses. So when you see that phrase in the New Testament, the law and the prophets, that's what it's referring to. So what was the relationship between Jesus and the law and the prophets, or Jesus and the Old Testament? He says it was not to destroy, but to fulfill. And something jumped out at me automatically, and no one else ever notices. Not even George Beck notices. It's this concept of this phrase, not but. I tell you, I've come across that so many times, and y'all heard me carry on about, you know, several lessons on it. The New Testament is filled with this type, this argumentative practice. Not but. And you'll read your first phrase, and there'll be a second phrase. There'll be a first premise and a second premise. It is found throughout the New Testament. I have a list of about 30 of them so far I've come across. This idea of not but, normally what it means is you look at the first premise, but that's not what is important. What is important is the second premise, what comes after the word but. I think about the example of the Apostle Paul. He told the Corinthians, he said, "I'm glad that I came not to baptize, but to teach." Paul's emphasis was not on baptism. That's not his role. His role was to teach, and others in his party were there to baptize. So several examples of this. Jesus says, "I'm not here to destroy." Destroying the old law, destroying the law of Moses, was not the purpose of Jesus Christ. His purpose was second premise, to fulfill it. The purpose of Jesus was to fulfill the Old Testament. You know, if we have some thoughts here, what would it mean to destroy the law or to destroy the prophets? What would that mean? Well, if Jesus wanted to destroy the law, then he would prevent it from fulfilling its purpose. If Jesus wanted to destroy the prophets, then he would prevent what they predicted from coming true. That's what would have happened if Jesus wanted to destroy the law. But that's not what he did. Jesus came to fulfill. And the way you fulfill the law is you allow it to accomplish its purpose. The way you fulfill the prophets is you complete their prophecies. And so, begin to think of that idea. Jesus had a purpose. And his purpose was to fulfill the Old Testament and to fulfill the prophecies. Romans 10 and 4 says, "For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes." See, Jesus wraps it up. He didn't destroy it. He didn't make the Old Testament of no effect. Jesus fulfilled the purpose of the Old Testament, and he fulfilled the prophecies of those old prophets. Verse 18, Jesus said, "For assuredly I say to you, to heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled." That's what's known as an idiom. It's known as an expression. Okay? So what's the explanation of the idiom? Well, a jot is the smallest letter of the Greek alphabet. That's what I would call an apostrophe. That's called a jot in Hebrew language, so, or in the Greek alphabet. So that's the smallest, seemingly most insignificant letter. A tittle is even smaller. And in fact, you probably can't see it from where you're sitting. These two letters here are different letters. But there's just a little bit different mark on the pen. I don't know if you can see it. It kind of has a protrusion right there. That is called a tittle. And that's what separates one letter from another. To give you another way to think about it, think about the capital letter O, and now think about the capital letter Q. And that one little mark is all that separates an O from a Q. And so I guess we could say that that is a tittle. It's a very small mark of the pen that separates things. So what Jesus is saying is, not even the smallest part of the law would pass away by destruction. Not even the smallest, most tiniest, most seemingly insignificant part of the law of Moses would be overlooked. Everything would be completely and totally fulfilled. I'm afraid a lot of people don't understand that. I'm afraid a lot of people don't understand that today in our religious world. I think there's a lot of folks who want to pick and choose parts of the Old Testament to enforce. And they like this part, but they don't like this part. And I don't believe that's what Jesus was saying. He said, there's not a jot or a tittle. It's not going to be fulfilled. Everything was to be fulfilled. Either the law is completely enforced, or it's been completely abolished. We can't ride the fence in the middle. We have to pick a side. And a lot of people heard this before. You probably have too. Well, instrumental music in worship, that's allowed because David had harps. So we try to go back into the Old Testament and we pull things from the Old Testament. And a lot of people will tell you the Ten Commandments are still into effect today. Ten Commandments still have, we need to follow the Ten Commandments. And that means we need to be assembling on the Sabbath day. We need to be doing some different, so you can't have it both ways. Catholic Church uses incense. They have dipped back into the law of Moses and they've equated that as something that needs to be done in worship. Feast days, the idea of the Passover and the Day of Atonement and things of this. Some have tried to make circumcision something from the Old Testament and bring it forth into the New. It's something that's something that needs to happen. We don't hear about that quite as much as they did in the first century. That was a major, major issue at the beginning of the church, the concept of circumcision, whether or not it was compulsory for a convert to be circumcised. Major problems. But you know, I've never heard much talk about this on this side. If we're going to take some of the Old Testament, we've got to take all of it. It's what the Lord said. Have you ever heard anybody say, well, we need to assemble at Jerusalem 3 times a year for worship? Because that's what they had to do in the law of Moses. 3 times a year, they're required to go to Jerusalem. I've never heard anyone try to make that compulsory today. I've never heard that. Animal sacrifices. If we're going to hold part of the Old Testament, then we also need to be sacrificing bulls and goats and pigeons and all the different sacrifices that had to occur on a daily basis. I haven't heard anyone ask for that. This is going to become important later in the study of our Sermon on the Mount. What about blasphemers and adulterers? You know what the punishment was under the law of Moses? Death. Death. So if you had a marriage that had a case of adultery, you're supposed to kill them. That's what the law of Moses said. You know, but you don't hear anybody clamoring for those parts of the law of Moses. People have pick and choose whatever they want, and I'm afraid we can't do that. We either take the law of Moses, or we accept the fact that it's been abolished. Galatians 5 and 3, Paul says, "And I testify again to every man who becomes circumcised that he is a debtor to keep the whole law." He said, anybody, if you want to pull back circumcision out of the old law into the new law, then you're a debtor to the entire law. You cannot pick and choose. So what about this time of fulfillment that we keep reading about? In Luke 16, verse 16, it says, "The law and the prophets," there's our phrase again, "the law and the prophets were until John. Since that time, the kingdom of God has been preached, and everyone is pressing into it. And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one tittle of the law to fail." Now, does that make a little more sense? It's kind of a different rendering of what we said in Matthew chapter 5. This idea, it's easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one tittle of the law to fail. Everything was going to be fulfilled. The question is, when? When was this fulfillment going to occur? Because some people say, well, it hadn't happened. It's going to be at the end of the time or the end of the age, and then there's going to be 1,000 years brought in. You get into all these different issues very quickly if we don't understand this passage in Matthew chapter 5. Jesus tries to explain it. Luke 24 and 44, "Then he said to them, these are the words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses and in the prophets and the Psalms concerning me." Notice Jesus kind of qualified it. What's going to be concerned, what's going to be fulfilled? He says, all those things concerning me. Everything in the Old Testament, the law, the prophets, and here's the one where he separates out the Psalms, by the way. When all three of those, all of those prophecies, anything that was going to be fulfilled in the Messiah, Jesus has already done it. Jesus has fulfilled the commandments. That's the time of fulfillment. Couple more. Acts 13 and 29. "Now when they had fulfilled all that was written concerning him, they took him down from the tree and laid him in a tomb." All things that were written concerning him. So think back to all those prophecies back in the Old Testament that talked about the suffering servant. Remember the one about the bones not being broken? You remember about the one about the garments had to be separated? See, Jesus couldn't die until all that had come to pass. Because he had to wait till all things had been fulfilled. Jesus was hung on the cross about 9 o'clock in the morning. You ever wondered why he didn't die at 10? Or he didn't die at 11? Or he didn't die at 12? Because not all things had been fulfilled. There were certain things that had to happen before Jesus was allowed to give up the ghost. Hear what he said in John 19 as he hung on the cross, verse 28. "After this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, said, I thirst." He knew it was done. All of the prophecies had been fulfilled. He knew. Everything that associated with him from the Old Testament, Jesus now says, it's been fulfilled. So when he received the sour wine, he said, it is finished. And why did he say it was finished? Because all things had been fulfilled. In Colossians 2 and 14, Paul goes on to write, "He having wiped out the handwriting of requirements," a euphemism, I suppose, for the law of Moses, "having wiped out the handwriting of requirements as against us, which was contrary to us, and he has taken out of the way, having nailed it to the cross." The Old Testament has been fulfilled. The Messiah has come, and everything has been fulfilled. And when it was, Jesus said, it's finished. We now live under a new and better covenant. The covenant began with the death of Jesus on the cross of Calvary. There's this concept of when did the new law actually start? You know, what's the Old Testament? What's the New Testament? Where does the Sermon on the Mount fit in? You see where the confusion comes from? In Hebrews, the 9th chapter, verse 16, it says, "For where there is a testament, there must also of necessity be the death of the testator. For a testament is in force after men are dead, since it has no power at all while the testator lives." See, the testament is going to begin with the death of Jesus Christ. Now we have this time where now Jesus is teaching the Sermon on the Mount, and it leads to a great amount of confusion. Where do these teachings fit in? Is this Old Testament? Is it New Testament? Where does it fit? And that's the question that we need to answer this morning. Continue verse 19. Jesus now makes a statement that I've never really understood. He says, "Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven." What's Jesus, what does he mean by this concept of the least and the greatest? For George Batty, it's an interesting way of looking at it. George Batty says, Jesus is teaching here that if a man breaks what he considers a least commandment under the Old Testament, he'll do the same when you give him a New Testament. The hard habit's a hard break. That if people of the day that were listening to Jesus speak there under the law of Moses, if they blew off parts of the law of Moses, if they didn't take it seriously, if they didn't listen to the smallest parts of the law, if they were very insincere in their worship, if they were insincere worshipers of the law of Moses, then they were going to be insincere worshipers under the new covenant as well. Kind of an interesting way to look at it, isn't it? Luke 16 and 10, Jesus says, "He was faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much." I think it's an interesting point there. Whoever wants to be kind of halfway dedicated, it doesn't matter what they do, they're always going to be halfway dedicated. George Batty goes on to say, if you find a faithful Muslim and they get converted, you know what they'll become? A very faithful Christian. Because whatever you're faithful in, you'll be faithful. If you blow things off, if you blow off the least commandments, then you're going to blow off the least and the smallest commandments of Christianity as well. I want you to think for a second about Saul of Tarsus. There is a man. He was dedicated to the law of Moses. He was strict to the law of Moses. And when he became converted, what did he become? He was converted and strict and righteous to the law of Christ. Now, if the Apostle Paul had been kind of shaky in Judaism, he kind of just, you know, sort of followed the command, sort of didn't, when he'd have become converted to Christianity, I reckon he'd have been the same. Have to be faithful in little, will be faithful in little in Christianity. But those that are faithful in much will continue to be faithful in much. Interesting way of looking at that passage. And finally, verse 20. "For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." Well, I want you to think that you're just a regular old Jew sitting up there on that mountain listening to Jesus talk. You're just a common old farmer or a carpenter or whatever you might be. And here you hear this conversation. He says, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. Wow. Can you imagine how daunting that sounds? I have to be better than the people that have dedicated their lives to all the study. I'm just a poor old farmer. And I'm supposed to have more righteousness than the people that are out there in Jerusalem in the temple. Sounds kind of a daunting task, doesn't it? But it's not going to be too much longer. Jesus is going to start making known his displeasure with the scribes and the Pharisees, because their worship wasn't true. It wasn't very sincere. They liked to walk the water, talk the talk, but they didn't like to walk the walk. They liked to tell people what to do, but they didn't do it themselves. And in fact, he even calls them whited sepulchers later on. He says, you're like this beautiful building that's filled with dead men's bones inside. He says, you look good on the outside, but what inside does not match. So he says, I want you, your righteousness is going to have to be true. Your worship is going to have to be faithful and true. It cannot be fake, and it can't be insincere like the scribes and the Pharisees. Unfortunately, I'm afraid many have taken from this verse that Jesus was about to begin comparing the law with the teachings of the Pharisees. And that's where our confusion really gets into. Where is the place of the Sermon on the Mount in the Old Testament and the New. Is Jesus comparing what Moses said to what the Pharisees said? And that's a very popular opinion in the religious world. That when he begins to talk about murder, and then he begins to talk about adultery, and then he's going to talk about divorce, and he's going to talk about several different issues, and he kind of compares them. And that's what we're going to be studying over the next couple of weeks. Is Jesus comparing what Moses said to what the Pharisees said? And that's what a lot of people think. However, I don't believe that's the answer. And let me show you why. And we're going to have to talk about this idea of it is written versus you have read. And so there's some phrases that are very, very technical as we begin to read through the passage. It appears that both apply to the written law of Moses. I'll give some examples. In John 10 and 34, Jesus speaking, he says, is it not written in your law? Well, obviously he's referring back to the written law of Moses. Matthew 21 and 16, and Jesus said to them, have you never read, out of the mouths of babes and nursing infants, you have perfected praise? So he's referring back to something that was written in the law of Moses, but he says, have you never read? And so there seems to be some confusion. When Jesus says, it is written, well, everyone assumes, well, that's the written law of Moses. But what about when he says, have you heard? It appears to me that he's still referring back to the written law of Moses. Let me give you a rather simple explanation. It's almost too simple. When Jesus spoke to the common, uneducated people, he said, you have heard that it was said. Because most likely they were illiterate. Most likely they didn't have copies of the Scriptures. Most likely they couldn't read it anyway. They had never read the Scriptures. They had had the Scriptures read to them. They had heard, but they had not read for themselves. When Jesus spoke to the scribes, and he spoke to the doctors and the lawyers and those that had dedicated their lives to the study of the law, he would say, it is written, or have you not read? Because they had read. And so it seems to me that when Jesus is speaking to different people, he understands them. He understands their situation. That there were some that had read the law, and there were some that had not. The regular common folk around the ground that were sitting there at the Sermon on the Mount, I bet most of them had never read the law of Moses. They were uneducated. They couldn't read it. But they had heard it by the reading of the scribes. That is why the common people put so much respect and emphasis upon the scribes, because they were the religious authority. That's where they got their information from, because they were unable to read it for themselves. So the Sermon on the Mount is going to continue now with several contrasts between what the law of Moses taught about certain issues and then what Jesus taught. And remember we read in Isaiah how it was going to be new? Jesus is now going to add a new phrase. But I say unto you. But I say unto you. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 24, after he concludes the Sermon on the Mount, he says, therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken to the wise man who builds his house on the stone. Remember the parable? But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them is like the man that builds his house on the sand. Did he say, whoever hears these sayings of Moses? No, he said. Whoever hears these sayings of Isaiah that I'm going to reinterpret? No, that's not what he said. Whoever hears these words of the prophets that I'm now going to re-explain? No, it's not what he said. He said, whoever hears these words of mine. And you know what the people did? They were astonished because Jesus spoke as one who had authority. He spoke as one that who could give the law. He was not just rehashing the law of Moses. He was not rehashing the words of the prophets. He was not reinterpreting or making a commentary on somebody else's words. These were his sayings. Jesus said, I say unto you, and give an example, Matthew 5 and 21. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. Can you find that second phrase written anywhere in the law of Moses? The concept of whoever is angry with his brother is going to be held the same way as someone who murders his brother? Is that found anywhere in the Old Testament? And the answer is no. Because Jesus was going to begin to speak new things. New things. And the people were astonished at what Jesus had to say. So what about Jesus in the Old Testament? The Sermon on the Mount, I do not believe, is a discussion of Old Testament law. I do not believe the Sermon on the Mount belongs in the Old Testament, but rather, it is the introduction to the kingdom law. It is different. It is not the law of Moses 2.0. It is not the law of the prophets 2.0. It is new teaching that the people had never heard. And Jesus said, "But I say unto you." Now Jesus was teaching something that the folks had never heard before. So let me give you kind of an idea here of what Jesus would do with the Old Testament as we wrap up our lesson. Seems to me those three things Jesus did with an Old Testament passage. Sometimes he accepted it. Leviticus 19 and 18 tells us we're to love our neighbor. You know what Jesus said in Matthew 5 and 43? He said, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor." He accepted it. He accepted it just like the old law did. Just what the law of Moses said, hey, he was fine with it. You shall love your neighbor. Sometimes, though, he would alter it. Exodus 20 and 13, that's a passage we just referenced. The law of Moses said, you shall not murder. And so now, Jesus is going to take that same concept in Matthew 5 and 21 and says, you have heard that it said, you shall not murder. But then he's going to add something to it. Whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. That is not in the Old Testament. That is not anywhere in the Old Testament. Jesus altered the Old Testament command, and he made it his own. Sometimes you realize Jesus flat out rejected an Old Testament command. In Leviticus 24 and 20, Bible teaches right there, well, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Is that what Jesus said? Huh? Because that's not what matched his teaching. But Jesus said in verse 5 and 38, let's go ahead and turn there, Matthew chapter 5. Verse 38 says, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Verse 39, but I tell you not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn to the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Law of Moses taught an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But see, that didn't fit into the new way that Jesus wanted things done. He didn't want the law of retaliation. So Jesus rejected it. And he said, but I tell you not to resist an evil person. So as we go through the remainder of this study over the coming months, keep this in mind, how Jesus dealt with the Old Testament. There are times that he accepted. There are times that he would alter. And there are times that he will flat out reject the passage. So we better be real, real careful when we read these passages that say something like, but I say unto you. Because Jesus is now teaching us his new law. It is the kingdom law. It is not just a reiteration of the law of Moses. So in conclusion, number one, Jesus did not come to destroy, but to fulfill the law of Moses. Everything, every jot, every tittle, everything that was concerning him would be fulfilled. And when it was fulfilled, there on the cross, Jesus said, it's finished. Because all fulfillment had come to pass. Number two, the words he spoke were new and of his own authority. These are the words of Jesus, the new kingdom law. And because of this, his words, number three, astonished the people. Because he spoke as one who had authority, and not just one who was up reading someone else's words. He spoke with authority. Number four, the words of Matthew 5 set the foundation of kingdom law, not the law of Moses. So is the Sermon on the Mount, going back to our major question, is the Sermon on the Mount part of the Old Testament or the New? And I believe it's part of the New. I do not believe it's part of the Old Testament rehashing out new or old ideas. Number five, you have read, that phrase was directed to the common person, who had only heard the scriptures from others, and they were unable to read it for themselves, whereas the phrase, you have read or you have written, would be spoken to those who were educated. Number six, Jesus either accepted, changed, or rejected certain Old Testament practices. And the apostles picked up on this concept, and that's what makes the basis of our New Testament teaching. Yes, there are things in the Old Testament that have been brought forth. Yes, there are things that were in the Old Testament that have been changed. And yes, there are things in the Old Testament that have been flat out rejected and not allowed in the New Testament. So as we keep that in mind, I believe it makes it easier for us to understand these things. Our last verse, John 7:46. No man ever spoke like this man. No one had ever spoken like Jesus before, because he had the authority of God when he spoke. Concludes our thoughts this morning. Hope something that was said that helps to maybe give us a little more understanding on this concept. We'd never like to close, though, without having a song of invitation. We can help you in any way. We stand ready to sing.